Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
I want to welcome everybody tonight. Thank you for coming. The first portion of our agenda tonight is the superintendent's report. I think we're starting with enrollment and staffing projections.
Correct. Board, you might want to go around.
Yes.
I think instead of having it up here, I'd be happier seeing it from you.
Yes, I do.
So what you're going to see tonight, Board, just so you know, I just want to emphasize that the document that Mr. Soto is going to present to you tonight is a fluid document. I just want to make sure and everybody else knows that this is our first budget presentation. The administrative team has had a lot of meetings. We collected surveys from the entire staff, which we took into account. We took into account the Board of Education goals, especially in the area of achievement and advancing our achievement as we move forward. But I just want you to know that, because sometimes people see things up here and wonder, well, is that it? Are we done? And the answer is absolutely not. We still have to watch enrollment, which is ever-changing.
Yes.
Budget constraints, Ms. Perkins. We have respect to the budget constraints, and some things have come in, some things have not. But we think we have a pretty solid presentation tonight, and I thank Mr. Soto because he absolutely led the charge in all our meetings, and he will lead tonight as well. So, Mr. Soto.
Thank you, Mr. Stewart. Welcome, everyone. As Mr. Stewart suggested, this is a very fluid document. I want to kind of emphasize that because as we go through this process, things may change. Things may change as a result of new information coming in, enrollment changes, staffing needs, and things of that nature. The first slide that you are going to look at is the elementary enrollment history over the past 6 years. As you can see, it goes from left to right from 2011 all the way to what we're projecting for 2016 in terms of our enrollment. What's interesting is that you can see sort of like almost a steady decline in terms of enrollment over at the elementary building. In 2011, we had 752 students. We are projecting 661 students next year, which is almost a 90 student difference over the past 6 years. We actually refer to a report that was created, an enrollment study report that was created by Western Suffolk Voices. In that report, it actually did predict accurately the fact that the enrollment at St. Richard's will decrease. And historically, over the last 3 or 4 years, you're going to see that our kindergarten classes has steadily decreased. This year we had 97, next year we're predicting to be at 95. Now, when you look at the grades in terms of the enrollment, K to 5, we break it down by section numbers per grade. So the chart that the grid that you have in front of you is looks at each column in the sense that the first column looks at the grade, which is K to 5. The second column looks at the total students that we have within that grade, and you're looking at it from left to right for the year 2015-16, which is the current school year. The third column is the students at the elementary school that actually are pulled out for a special class in terms of special education, a self-contained class. So that brings you to the fourth column, which is the general education students that are the remaining students outside of the general population. And the next column, the 2015-16 column, gives you the section numbers that we have allocated this year for that particular grade. The next column gives you the average number of students per section within that grade. The next column is the rollover data for the 2016-17 school year. So we, like I said a moment ago, we're projecting 95 kindergarten students in grade K next year. But if you look at the second column, and for some reason, I think you're right, Carol, this doesn't work. Yeah, it doesn't really work. She's showing me this pointer, but unfortunately it's not working. But if you look at the second column and you go down from K in 2015 to 1 to 2, and you look at the primary grades this year, you have 126, 126, and 123. But if you look at the previous 3 years, they are much lower. 3 years ago, our K enrollment was 115. 2 years ago, it was 102. This year is 97, and we're predicting that next year is going to be 95. So when you look at the next column, which is...
Tell me for 1 second. If this year is 97, where does that... That translates then into first grade for 16,
yes,
17?
Yes, exactly. Okay. So when you look at it, you're going to look at it diagonal going down.
Uh-huh.
So once again, I wish...
Got it, 91.
Exactly.
The 97.
Okay.
That's
so if you look at the fourth column corresponds with the seventh column. But once again, you're just going to scale it down. So the K in 2016 is actually 95.
Okay.
Now, DCT is our Direct Consultant Teacher Program. It is a special education program at the elementary building and across the district, K-12, where we have two teachers in the classroom. Now, the reason I'm mentioning that is because contractually, we have to keep those classes at 25, which is going to explain two more columns down. So the next column looks at the average size per grade. The column after that looks at the total seats. Contractually, with the CMTA, we have a contract that in their contract it states that at the elementary level, we can go up in terms of class size up to 29, with the exception of DCT classrooms. That has to be capped at 25. So when you add the 29 times the four sections plus the 25, which leaves us with 141 seats, which if we went to five sections of kindergarten next year, we have 46 seats remaining. So let me just kind of speak to that briefly in terms of kindergarten. The reason why we feel that instructionally it's beneficial to keep those sections at a kind of a low number is simply speaking that kindergartners come to us from the preschool setting. Preschool is typically 2 to 2.5 hours a day. Now they make that big jump, that big transition to kindergarten, which is a 6-hour day. With that, sometimes kids have difficulty transitioning. Some don't. Some have a great transition from 2.5 hours to 6 hours, but some do experience some difficulties. As a result of it, we feel that it is beneficial for those classes to keep them low so that the teacher-to-student ratio is lower and there is more optimal time that could be dedicated per student.
And we also haven't replaced the paraprofessionals.
And we haven't replaced, no. Now, one of the things that Ms. Turkington kind of alluded to is a couple of years ago, we always had a paraprofessional in the kindergarten classroom with the teachers to provide assistance in terms of supervision. So it did address some of those transition difficulties that students may experience when coming into a 6-hour day. Due to budgetary constraints, we did decide at the time to reduce that, to eliminate it, essentially. So right now, the ratio is really 19 to 1, when in previous years it might have been 19 to 2 with the assistance of the paraprofessional. So that's a very good point. Thank you.
And also, just because of the bond and those decreasing projections, in some ways that bond was addressing who was already here. And we know that it's decreasing,
yes.
but all that is still necessary.
Oh, absolutely. That
was a big question. You know, and I just don't want people to see those decreasing numbers and think, then what are we doing a bond for? If there are any questions about that, I don't know if anyone has them in the audience, but just to, if you could just address
that. Sure, absolutely.
Very quickly.
One of the things that the bond kind of addresses, I mean, we had the first bond that the community did not support in terms of the books. We went back and we created what I would describe as almost a repair bond, where we have allocations reserved for things that, in our opinion, are necessary to the continuation of our program, such as the replacement of the elementary rooms that leak, such as the refurbishment of the bathrooms, such as the refurbishments of the science labs that are antiquated, that date back to the 70s. So these are all repair things that don't necessarily equate to an expansion, because we're not necessarily expanding. The capital improvement bond that was accepted, that the second bond that was accepted by the community, is not an expansion bond. It is more of a repair bond. That's the way I would describe it. So when you go to now grade 1 and 2, grade 1 this year we have 4 sections. We have, currently we had 94 students within those 4 sections, so we had 23.5 students in each section. We are proposing that next year we do the same thing to our current kindergarten class, which is actually less students, which is 91, which is the class average size will be 22. We are also projecting that we do the same thing to grade 2, which we keep that at 4. Now, the intermediate, if you look at the difference between the primary grades, which is K to 2, versus the intermediate grades, which is 3 to 5, you can see a disparity. You see that next year we are projecting 95, 91, 94. Now, the intermediate grades, we're projecting 115, 118, and 120. Significantly a larger class size. So this year we had 5 in grade 3. We're projecting that we're going to have 5 sections in grade 3 next year as well. The same for grade 4. Now, grade 5, if you see, there is a difference between this year's class and next year's class. This year's class, we had 109 students, which we were able to kind of squeeze the 4 sections this year. Next year, we're having 120, which is 11 more students. The 11 more students for us is half a class. So we're projecting that we will increase that section count from this year to next year to 5. But we will still keep the overall Clayton QE projections at 28 classrooms. Okay. The next sort of grid that you have underneath the general education staffing is the special education staffing. Now, in Clayton Huey, as well as the secondary, we have 3 programs, a continuation of programs at the elementary. We have a DCP program, which I explained before, which is a direct and self-contained teacher program. And then we have 2 ratios of self-contained programs. We have 12-1-1. And we have 811, which is our most restrictive environment. Now, the second column is the enrollment, the current enrollment for 2015, and then you look at the projected enrollment for 2016. As you can see, DCD program stays very similar at 48 to 42. So we are projecting 5 sections for that, which is 5 teachers. Our self-contained 12-1-1 is a decrease somewhat by 6 students from this year to next year, but the numbers are still 3 sections within that.
Are those 6 students, they're moving to 6?
Yes, they are.
Right?
Actually, it's interesting. We have 10 students moving from the elementary 5th grade to 6th grade, subcontent, which is an entire class, which I'm going to get to momentarily. Yeah. So that's the difference in numbers from 31 to 25. And our 811 program, we have 14 this year. We are projecting 4 to move to the middle school. We are projecting 2 will come in, but that still leaves us at 12. Now, 3 sections, the max of 3 sections can be 24, but now we're down to half of that at 12. So we're projecting that we won't need 3 sections, that we'll need 2 because of something within state regulation that in special education, you can actually group students together. Based on, not necessarily based on grade, but based on 36-month age difference. So we can have a kindergartner with a second grader if the age difference is less than 36 months. So looking at our projection for next year, we predict that we can do that. We can have 1 class at 6 and another one at 6, and we can keep them comfortably at 2 sections and still have space within the 2 sections to absorb students if we have students moving in. Okay. So that brings the total count from 11 this year to 10 next year, which is a reduction by 1.0 FTE. Now, when you look at Clayton Huey and you look at any building, there's more to the management of a building than the teachers and the teaching staff. So there's obviously administration, there's special area support personnel in terms of art, music, the librarian, paraprofessionals, PE teachers, school nurse, reading teachers, school psychologist, social worker, and teaching assistants. Now, from this year to next year, there are no projected changes with the exception of 2. The first one is teaching assistants. If we do reduce a section at the elementary school in terms of the 811 program, we also will be reducing a teaching assistant, because each 811 classroom has a teacher and a teaching assistant to provide the instructional and behavior supports for the students in the class. So that will be a reduction from 3 to 2. Also, the one addition that we're proposing is a clinician. Mrs. Stewart mentioned a moment ago that we conducted a survey with the assistance of the Board of Education. We all came together. We looked at three primary components, which is curriculum instruction, building climate, and also assessment. Now, looking at that, some of the responses that came back actually recommended the fact that we should increase our support staff in terms of clinicians, in terms of mental health support. We currently have three mental health staff in the district. We have a school psychologist at the elementary, another school psychologist at the secondary complex, and a social worker that's actually K-12. She spends 2 days at the elementary and 3 days at the secondary complex. That decision was made a few years ago due to, once again, budgetary constraints, but we are definitely feeling the constraint right now. We're definitely feeling the effects of it. We would like to do more in terms of mental health. We would like to do more in terms of parent outreach, reaching out to families, trying to get third-party agencies involved, trying to get to the root of what is causing a lack of student achievement on the part of some of our students. To do that, we need someone to kind of feed into the home. We need someone to communicate with community members. And that is something that, unfortunately, we don't have right now. So there was a huge consensus from a lot of the staff that we met with, because in addition to the surveys, the Board of Education had an interesting idea for the district-level administrators this year, where they wanted us to conduct what is called skip meetings. A skip meeting is a meeting that is held with an individual that supervises your immediate supervisor. And we came back together. It was with myself, it was either with myself, Mrs. Stewart, or Mrs. Angolia, the other assistant superintendent, and we came back to talk about what are some of the things we're hearing from the staff. And we've met with everyone from teaching personnel to paraprofessionals to clericals. We're trying to really hit every staff member in the district. And one of the things that we've heard unanimously is that this is an area of concern. This is something that they want us to address. Now, can we, that's where this piece comes to play. Can we sort of sharpen our pencils and find a way to do it? We hope that we can. So in each presentation in the elementary, middle, and high school, you're going to see an increase of a clinician by a 0.33, which is obviously 1.0 when you put them together. So we're hoping that the Board of Education will consider that this year. Moving forward, but the total direct contact FTEs is 93.8 for next year, which is a reduction by 1.7 for this year, because we are reducing staffing in special education by a TA as well as a teaching staff member. Any questions regarding this piece? Okay. Now the next piece is the middle school. The middle school, in terms of enrollment, what you're going to see is that the numbers are not necessarily fluctuating as much as we saw like at the elementary. Because what's interesting, if you really look at the enrollment data and the history of the enrollment in Southern Riches, is that the last 6 years, our numbers were pretty stagnant. Most of the classes were close to 125, 120, 126. But what is happening over the last 3 years is that those numbers have been steadily declining. But like I said, it's a little more stable. You see 372, 386, 382, 370, 349, and we're projecting next year to be at 355, which is actually an increase of 6 students. Now, the same slide that I presented for the elementary is presented for the middle school. So what you're looking at is the three grades. I'm not going to go through the explanation of the two columns. I'm just simply going to explain the grade 6. We are presenting to the Board of Education and the community for your consideration two scenarios. The first one is the scenario of the fifth grade moving up to sixth grade with 4 sections, which is what we currently have now. Now, when you look at the last 3 columns, what you're going to see is that if we went to 4 sections, we will have to have 28 students in 3 sections and 1 DCT section at 25. Now, what makes this even more interesting is the fact that at the high school and middle school, The contract reads a little different. The CMTA contract reads different for us in the sense that we cannot, well, we have to do everything we can to try to keep the sections at 25. If we don't keep the sections at 25, we actually have to pay teachers an overage per student for every student beyond 25. So I haven't done the math, but you can imagine it's three students times three, so it's nine students per class. So that's what we would have to figure out as well. Now, that's scenario number one. Also, when you look at 28, the cap at the middle and high school is 29. We cannot go beyond 29. So not only would we pay additional funds to the teachers for exceeding the 25 cap, but we would only have literally three seats in the entire grade. So if students move in, we might go over that cap and obviously have to open a fifth section because of contractual reasons. Now, the second scenario is if we went to five sections, which when we originally did this, it was actually an interesting conversation, we thought we would have to have five sections. We thought, that's too much of a risk to take. So as of this morning, I started looking at this, and I think Ms. Bates wanted to kill me, and I think Ms. Adolia wanted to kill me, but the master scheduling I had to look at this. So I took a look at it, and it's kind of too early to tell right now, but I think I might be able to work out the master schedule so that at the middle school, so that we can keep it at five sections and not increase enough FTE. So there's a possibility that we might be able to do that, but like I said, I'm just a little leery to kind of express that now because it's just too early.
If you were going to, let me just ask a question, maybe I'm missing it. If you were going to go to four, if you determine you have to go to four.
Yes.
Why would you do it in sixth grade where you have 109 versus seventh grade where you have 97? Am I missing? I might be missing.
No, you're not. You're not.
No, the teachers in the seventh grade. The teachers in seventh grade are certified in a specific area. They're not elementary teachers. Does that make any sense?
They're secondary.
Well, I understand, but if you're just looking at total FTEs for that building, and you could say we were going to go to four in seventh grade. Yeah. Forget about the people and the certifications.
We could. And I can speak to that. Yeah. We can go to four in seventh grade.
Yeah.
That wouldn't necessarily help our sixth grade situation. Because what will happen is that the teachers in seventh grade are certified 7 to 12.
Uh-huh.
So if a teacher certification works K to 6 or 7 to 12.
Right.
So if we went down to 4 in grade 7, we still wouldn't help the sixth grade situation.
But if you were looking at an aggregate number and saying, well, we don't want to increase the total number of classroom FTEs on that chart.
Yes.
And we want to be as efficient as we possibly can, you would, rather than saying we're going to have four sections in grade 6 and have 28 kids in a section and leave ourselves three spots, right, and pay that overage, why wouldn't you say if we wanted to, and maybe I'm missing, if you wanted to maintain a flat FTE, reduce the 7th grade and keep 6th grade at 5.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to say is that the teachers that currently teach 7th grade, they're certified grade 7 to 12, meaning you reduce the section, so you reduce to the 4. So now we have teachers that are 0.8. So
right.
We have the social studies teacher, the English, the math, science teacher at a 0.8.
Uh-huh.
So we have to use that 0.2, or we reduce that in a sense.
Got it.
But they couldn't go into 6th grade and now teach the 6th grade because it's a completely different certification.
I understand.
Okay. So that is what we're looking at, but I'm very optimistic. I took a look at it very quickly with Mrs. Angola and Mrs. Bay very quickly. I know you don't have to speak to this because I literally just called her on the phone. I sent her the chart that I worked out, and I said, what do you think? And she's like, I think it looks okay. And I'm like, okay, all right, well, I'm not going to say anything. But I think we might be able to do it. I mean, it's going to take a lot of hard work, but I think we're all willing to do it, and I think it's going to be a great process once it's done. Hopefully we can get it done. But that's something that we're looking at, and I think hopefully in a couple of weeks we'll probably be able to give the Board of Education an update as to where we stand with that. Now, in terms of special education, as I mentioned a moment ago, we do have 10 fifth graders moving up to middle school. Bless you. So that actually, and we have only 4 eighth graders moving out of the middle school. So that gives us now an increase from 22 this year to 27 next year. Now, obviously, the cap is 12, so we're going to exceed that. So the recommendation will be to open up a third section of self-contained. Open up a third section of self-contained, which increases our FTEs in the area of special education from 7 to 8 next year. Any questions? All right, same as the elementary, we are looking at some increases. I'm going to, three predominant increases, which I'm going to speak to. The art increase, we do have an art teacher at a 0.8 right now at the middle school. We're looking to increase it from a 0.8 to a 1.0. That is directly associated with the special education class moving up, because as they move up, we need to offer them specials as well. Also, the clinician, I spoke about the clinician a moment ago. Now, the other piece that I really wanted to speak about is languages other than English. Right now, we have a 1.4 FTEs dedicated to the middle school. We're looking at hopefully increasing it to a 2.0. In 2004, the elementary, when it was originally founded, started with a 2-year language program. Where traditionally, that's what most middle schools have. Look at New England districts such as Eastern Riches, West Hampton, Eastport, South Manor. They all have a 2-year program. West Hampton actually has a 3-year program. But we have a 1.4 program, which is a 1 year of 8th grade language, which we are required to do. We could not offer it. I mean, we could not eliminate it. It is a state mandate. We have to offer 1 unit of language. So we offer it traditionally in 8th grade, and then we have an exploratory language at the 7th grade. We're proposing increasing that by a 0.6, making it a full, almost like a 3-year program, where students will experience language, either French or Spanish, which are the two languages that we teach in 6th grade. Then they will continue in 7th grade, and then obviously they will have it a full year in 8th grade. The reason that we're proposing that is, like I said a moment ago, we did have it in 2004. In 2010, due to budgetary reasons, we did reduce that. But it is something that, when speaking to the language teachers at the secondary complex, and I had the opportunity to speak to them during our SNP meetings, this is something that the first sentence out of every language teacher's mouth during my meeting was, can we increase load at the middle school? Okay, so how are you? But can we increase load at the middle school? That's what they had to say to me. And the rationale are good reasons. I mean, linguistically, kids gain a lot from understanding a second language. Culturally, socially, there's social studies implications, there's English implications. They will be on par with students in neighboring districts. And it is the right thing to do for our program. Students definitely deserve to have a second year of language. And if we can do it, we will, like I said, we will sharpen our pencils, find a way to increase the 0.6 in language at middle school and make it a 2.0 and give our kids an enriching experience of language 6 through 8.
So let me ask you a quick question. On the 12-1-1, so we're adding a section. No, you don't have to go back. We're adding a section,
yes,
which is one FTE for an additional teacher in 6 through 8. But isn't it the 1-1, would it also be one TA? Or is?
No, because self-contained, my self-contained 1-1 classes do not have a TA.
Okay, so it's 12.
It's 8-1-1. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So not the 12-1-1.
Okay.
So we're just adding a teacher. We're not adding a TA.
Right.
Okay. Everything else remained the same with the exception of the three items that I just mentioned. This year, we are suggesting an increase of 1.7, because we did have the decrease. So our overall FTEs on the top, 2016, 2017, middle school projected FTEs, it can be 56.9 or 57.9. And I think we can make it 56.9. Okay? Any questions regarding anything on this particular chart?
Ricardo, just go back to the load piece. It would be 6th grade would be exploratory? Mm-hmm. With a point,
yes,
6, we're able to add,
yes,
exploratory,
yes,
6 and a 4.
Yes, the way we're looking at it, and once again, I just looked at it this morning, but the way we're looking at it is that we can bounce language, make it an 8B schedule in sixth grade, bouncing it off of PE, so students were experiencing it for the entire year, in sixth grade and seventh grade. Now, in eighth grade, we're mandated to provide it for one unit. So it's a full period.
It's half a unit in sixth and seventh.
Yes, exactly. It's a half a unit.
But we've got to be very careful. That's why, you know, we're cautious, because we start to talk about the extra lab and the ELA and math. You have to make sure you look at the AIS and other components before we get to the finale, because we had four maturations right over the last month that we've been talking about, pulling and trying to figure out what's truly in the best interest of each grade and
the
students. So, you know, but we all agree that we would like to see additional load right now. Whether or not we can figure it out in the best way, it is to be seen.
Yeah, and I mean, the scheduling piece is something that I am very confident that we have enough individuals that understand scheduling to kind of work through that. Mr. Stewart, so I'm not really too concerned with that piece. I think we could all fit it in. But if we're given the green light, I think we could all fit it in. I'm not really too concerned with that piece. But like I said, it is something that I think we need. It is something that we're hearing that the teachers want back. It is something that we think will make our students stronger academically. Especially within that language. And like I said, the language, the study of a language has other implications to other disciplines as well. So we need to keep that in mind as well. Any other questions regarding the middle school? All right, now the high school is kind of interesting because the enrollment kind of fluctuates kind of all over. In a sense. And poor Mr. Caswell, he's at the beck and call of, like, you know, what's happening at the elementary middle school, and he just kind of like inherits the grades. To give you an example, this year, graduating class is 165 students. It's a lot of kids. He's getting, he's actually getting only 125. That's coming, no, 125, and we're projecting 20 from East Merges. So that's 145. So right there, that's the 20 student loss. Okay. Now this is once again the high school projections. I'm not going to go through all the columns, but if you look at sort of like the average of the class size for the high school, it's roughly about 23 students a section. So we're looking at six sections across the board. What I did do is I just wanted the audience and the Board of Education to kind of understand what like a typical high school schedule looks like. So typically a student will take, and this is grades 9 to 11, when students turn seniors, their schedule kind of opens up a little bit. They have more opportunities to take electives, and they don't have necessarily the third year mandate, I mean the fourth year mandate in science and math, even though most of our students do take science and math as 4 years, but they don't necessarily have that mandate. So they typically take an English class, a social studies class, a science, usually a ninth grader will take living environment. The lab, there's a lab component to it. PE usually bounces off that lab. There's a math, some of our math classes actually have a lab, which I'm going to discuss momentarily. And then there's a lunch and or math lab. There's a language. Students at the high school would either be taking French 2 or Spanish 2 if they're following the sequence that they will follow from middle school. And then they have an elective. Why I put mandated is that for students to get a high school diploma, they need 22 credits. 3.5 of those credits actually are elective credits. So we have to provide them with electives. The second elective is not necessarily a mandate, but it can be thought of as an enrichment, and sometimes it does fulfill the mandate as well. Now, the same chart that I developed for the elementary and middle school looks a little different for the high school, because the high school is a very different animal. It really is. And you only kind of really appreciate that perspective when you kind of like work in like all different buildings. So the high school, you look at it more departmentally. So you have the departments here with the enrollments for this particular year, the amount of sections that we allotted for those enrollments, and the FTEs of those enrollments. Of these sections. Now, this can really kind of confuse a lot of people because of the fact that, just to give you an example, let's say technology, some of the sections are not necessarily equated to 0.2. Sometimes they're 0.1 because it's a semester class. So So this can get a little confusing. But the three points that I really wanted to emphasize is the increases in math, social studies, and special education. I'm going to speak to each one individually. In mathematics, we're suggesting an increase by 0.3, and that is for the Algebra 2 lab. We have some of our sections in Algebra 2 that they run off a lab, meaning it's a 90-minute block every other day, either on the A or B day. Some of our classes do not have the lab. We're suggesting incorporating the lab component to all of our Algebra 2 classes next year. If you, not to kind of harp on like data, but if you look at our statistics last year, that is one area that our students kind of struggle with. So we want to provide them with the most support that we can. We have conversations with our math teachers. We have conversations with the administration. At the secondary complex, we've had conversations with administrators at other buildings to determine what is the best, like, sort of machination to use to provide our students with the maximum support so that they can improve their performance in the class. And this is one thing that we all came to the same conclusion, that this is something that will benefit our kids. So to do that next year across the board in Algebra 2 would be an increase of a 0.3.
Now, is that something that you could use at the 7th grade? You know, if you put the 7th grade down to four sections, then you have 0.2 math, 0.2 social studies. Could you use them? Maybe not to teach that algebra lab, because I would assume it's the same teacher, but to teach other math classes at that level.
I mean, you could, because the teachers of the 7th grade teacher, Mrs. Connolly, is 7 to 12 certified, so you could be creative and make sure that the two schedules are aligned and make sure that she's off with maybe a geometry class. I mean, we haven't really thought of that, but you can. I mean, the answer would be yes. It's a lot easier for, let's say, a math versus... you might be able to do it with the math, so maybe the math will go from a 6.4 to 6.2.
Right.
So, but one of the things I want to stress to you is that fact that right now, the 0.3 extra that I'm discussing is not FTEs as equated in salary. It's FTEs equated in overages. What we're able to do contractually is that if we have a class that's over, if we have a particular section that's over within the department, we can pay a teacher to pick up that section. We pay the teacher a certain amount, and it's a way for the teacher to assist their own department, and it's a way for us to maintain additions in terms of overages without paying the salary cost of that FTE. So the suggestions that I'm making here in terms of math and social studies, it will be done through overages, not through hiring of another math teacher or a social studies teacher. Does that make sense?
Josh, that's really important.
I got it.
Yeah, that overture thing. And also, that's the gateway to the advanced region.
It is. It is.
So let's all remember that. And one of the goals about it, you know, the advanced region of the board, this certainly will hopefully
absolutely help. The advanced region of Walmart students need to apply 22 credits, but they need to pass eight regions examinations. One regions examination that they have to pass is the Algebra 2 regions exam. They cannot receive the advanced Regents diploma without passing that exam. And unfortunately, with a lot of kids across the state, that is that one exam that's very troublesome for kids. It's a difficult exam. That's why we're proposing that addition lab to provide them with that additional support.
And because we're pushing the middle school more numbers in those accelerated classes, so more kids will be taking that class at an earlier age as well.
So yes, which
are right,
which
that's a huge point.
Yes,
so why all those classes should have that component, because now kids in eighth grade, we've doubled the amount of kids who are now taking in eighth grade and pushing them up, so that extra support.
They normally will be taking it in 11th grade. Okay. As an eighth grade push, they will be taking it in 10th. So there's two things that you have to consider when you do something like this in terms of acceleration. Is the one piece is they haven't had the same amount of time with the subject matter itself. So that additional time would be of assistance. And two, the maturity factor as well. It is a very difficult exam that requires a tremendous amount of studying and dedication on part of the student and the families and us. So it is that loss of it as well. So if we gave them that additional 0.3 within that math department, it would give them almost like another, if you look at it, another half year within that subject, or within that course, within Algebra 2.
So they take the kids are taking algebra in 8th grade, and then they don't take algebra 2 until 10th grade?
Yes. They go for algebra, geometry, honors in 9th grade, and then in 10th grade, they take algebra 2, and then in 11th grade, they usually take pre-calculus, or there's other machinations as well, and they can take AP calculus and as a senior at high school.
And now sometimes we have tutoring to assist students. And this will be it in... Will now this address it, the extra personnel with the...
We have to see, Wendy. I'm not really too sure. It would offset the tutoring that we offer the students that are struggling. I don't know if it's going to replace it. I don't know if it's going to replace it or if it's going to do away with it, because some students do require that sort of like direct instruction.
You know, Wendy, I don't know if it will replace it. I think more kids will get through, so therefore they can take more rigorous courses as they move forward.
Yes.
And then their college, when they send their transcript, that they're able to see the rigor of that coursework, which really gets you into college. Your application is, I think, better accepted by those admissions officers when they see that than your actual GPA. But I can't imagine it, and this is my own opinion, you're still going to have those tutoring because you're still going to have those group of children that need it.
Yeah.
So maybe it's the 10 instead of 15.
And financially, just trying to see how it will work and if this can.
It might.
It'd be great.
It's going to be hard to see year one.
Right.
Because to be honest with you, I mean, we won't necessarily know until maybe like the second or third quarter, like if they really need that extra support to be successful in the Regents examination.
But we can be mindful.
Of course, absolutely. And we will.
We definitely will
be mindful. We'll be cognizant of it. And hopefully we can look at offsetting the course of this by the tutoring. Once again, I don't know if it's going to replace it because sometimes with the rigor of a course, you know, we also want the grades to remain the same. Meaning we don't want necessarily kids going through the system and the grades declining as they move through the system. So you need to provide them that support so that that doesn't occur. So that is mathematics. Now, social studies, one of the charges that the Board of Education had for the administration last year is in March of 2015, the administration conducted a presentation for the Board of Education in terms of how to increase student achievement, student performance. One of the things that Mr. Caswell spoke to was increasing the AP offerings and the concurrent offerings at the high school. The point three that we're suggesting for social studies, once again, will be overages, but that point three will be dedicated directly to two AP classes at the high school. One is AP comparative politics, and the next is AP geography. So those two courses, that point three, would meet the charge that the Board of Education had for the high school, which Mr. Caswell spoke to last year in March. So once again, we are trying to increase the rigor. We are trying to increase the AP offerings, the concurrent offerings, and this is one way to do it. Once again, it is through overages. It's not through a personnel. It is through the individual within the department.
How many teachers do we have doing these overages
We have, believe it or not, we have quite a few. I wish this thing would work, I'm sorry. But right now, business, if you look at business, it's a 1.2. We actually have a 1.4 this year because that particular teacher is teaching a 0.2 overage. We have overages in English. We have a 0.2 overage there. I mean, we have overages scattered all over the secondary complex. Even at the middle school, we have overages as well. So it is a way to sort of be mindful of the needs of our kids, but still be mindful of the economic constraints that we have. And our teachers have been very, very respectful of that, been very on board with, you know, providing students with additional courses. Most of the course ideas come from the teachers. They actually go to Mrs. Caswell, or they go to Mrs. Bates and say, look, I would love to run creative writing, I'd love to do this, but could you get it through? And, you know, that's where the overages come in. So a lot of the ideas for courses are not generated from us, per se. They're generated from the teachers. And the last piece is special education. We are suggesting a 0.8 increase, and let me kind of speak to this. For years now, when we first started the 811 program, we always have had a half-day program at the high school, where students go to BOCES first in the morning, and they come to us in the afternoon for half of the day. Historically, over the last 2 or 3 years, we've seen a number of students leave our program to attend full-day programs at neighboring districts, such as Shore and Green River, Hampton Bays, other East Fort Sutton Manor. All of these districts have full-day programs. We've been looking at the possibility of having a full-day program. That was part of the original capital bond that went forth to the community, and unfortunately we did not get the allocated space for that. That's another one that I think if I work with Mr. Thode, Mr. Caswell, Mrs. Ingoli on a high school schedule, I think I could, you know, find a room where I can utilize it for the full day 811 program. I think it's going to be difficult, but I think we can do it, and that's what we're proposing at this time. I think that when you look at the financial piece of it, the program itself will be self-sufficient, because our kids will remain here, will not go to BOCES. Every student that goes to BOCES for half a day, obviously we have to pay BOCES, and the students that we tuition in would stay with us as well. So we would increase the revenue side as well. So our expenditures will go down, our revenues will increase as well. So that is, I'm hoping the Board of Education will consider that as well. And that brings our conclusion to the high school, the FTEs. Actually, just one more piece. In terms of clinician, obviously you see the 0.33 at the high school as well. So we just took the 1.0 and we divided it among the three buildings. So in terms of FTEs at the secondary complex, nothing has changed. In terms of the high school special area support personnel, so Mr. Caswell's FTEs, the increase, it's just really contributed to the 0.8 in special education, the 0.3 in social studies, and the 0.3 in mathematics, which brings Mr. Caswell's totals to a 1.7 increase in FTEs. Any questions regarding anything that I presented thus far?
So what's the total increase, decrease, if you net them?
Okay, the total increase, actually, I had a feeling that question would come up. At the elementary, we're looking at a decrease of 1.7 FTEs. At the middle school, we're looking at an increase of 2.1. And at the high school, we're looking at an increase of 1.7. So the total increase is 2.1.
But when you look at it, you know, the total increase when you net it all out is 2.1, but if it's somebody teaching an additional class, if you looked at it, an increase of...
In terms of just FTE?
Staff.
Okay, the increase of staff would be a 1.6. The increase of staff.
Okay, so 2.1 total FTEs, 1.6 staff.
Yes, 1.6 staff. Okay. Because one is a clinician, the 0.6... Oh, no, I'm sorry. 0.2, yeah.
What is it?
2.4
in staff. 2.4.
In staff.
2.4. Mr. Soto, I don't see a breakdown for the high school level of 811 classes, of 1211 classes, or 1511 classes, and inclusion classes. And how many kids are in each one of those classes?
I didn't provide that. I can get that, but I don't have
it. You did
that
it for
right
the
now.
Middle school and the elementary.
I did. Because once again, when I look at the high school, I do kind of see it a little differently because it's so departmentalized, where it's not that stagnant. Where at the high school, we may have students that may have a dual program, where students are in the GCT program for two subjects, and then another self-contained program for another two subjects. It's not so straightforward. So, I mean, I can get that to the board at a later time. I just don't have the numbers off the top of my head.
I just think that that's imperative for the board to know, you know, like, how many kids are we actually educating in 811, you know, at the school?
Well, the 811, I know. At the 811, next year, we're projecting 8 across the board in all three sections.
And we have three sections at the high school?
We have two at the middle school and one at the high school.
One at the high school.
Yes.
And is it 15-1-1, right, at the high school?
At the high school, it does increase to 15-1-1.
And how many?
15-1.
How many sections of that do we have?
We have a section of 15-1 in each discipline across the board in terms of grades 9, 10, and 11, and 12. Does that count?
Yeah, so in each subject area, we have 9.
A 15-1, yes.
So they're not combined.
You can combine. Generally, no. You can combine. We can combine 15-1. At the high school, it tends to be a little more difficult because 15-1, a 15-1 class at the high school could be a 15-1 in living environment, or it could be a 15-1 in earth science, or it could be a 15-1 in algebra, or 15-1 in geometry. So it's a lot more difficult to combine those classes because they're so content specific. It's almost impossible. You would have to have a teacher literally teaching two curriculums at the same time, which we don't normally do. We normally keep them specific to the grade and specific to the course that they're teaching.
If a child's not passing, say they take Algebra 1 and they're not passing, and now they go on to geometry because they have not passed the Regents.
Okay.
Do we have opportunity for those kids that are in the 15-1-1 to then take the Algebra 1 if they have room in their schedule and sit in on that class again?
So you mean repeat the class?
Yeah.
If they did, okay, so they've taken the class once, they failed the class.
No, failed the Regents.
So they passed the course.
So they passed the course, but failed the Regents.
Yeah.
Technically, what we've done in the past, we've allowed students to kind of order the class for exactly the purposes that you're suggesting, where they would regain some of the material, some of the topics, if they're struggling in certain components. But technically, you can't award student credit for a course that they've already taken. So does that make sense?
I'm not saying award them credit for it, but I'm talking about getting those kids to get their Regents diploma.
Okay.
You know, and that's...
Well, we've done that before. We have done that before. If a student... The question is, if a student fails a particular region but passes the course, which is possible and it does happen, we've given students an opportunity to audit the class where they sit in on the class just to make sure that they maybe absorb the material once again, but you can't award them credit for that class.
So let me ask you just a different question. I appreciate everything that you've done tonight. I think it's clear, and I don't know if you're going to know the answer off the top of your head, and then we'll move into the rest of the agenda. But so you based on high school projections, ninth grade estimate enrollment of 20 East Mauritius students, with the 165, so that was a obviously it's a very large class compared to every other class, was the East Mauritius enrollment also large? What's going out? For how many East Mauritius children are?
30 East Mauritius students are leaving the senior class.
30 are graduating.
We're projecting 20, same percentage-wise. We're projecting to do just as well. Percentage-wise.
So their class was bigger, and now it's smaller.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Right now, their class is at 85.
Right.
So we're projecting about 20, I think we said 24%, which is about 20.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Great.
I think I have this.
It's just a quick open and close.
Yeah, I think it's just an open and close, but...
This is the safe school.
Yeah, smart school zone.
Smart school.
It's just this. I don't know if you want me to speak to it or.
What do you have to say? No, just I'm a smart school. I mean,
okay.
If you want
to. I'll give a brief overview.
Yeah.
All right, the smart schools preliminary plan was presented to the Board of Education for its consideration on November 19, 2015, by the Technology Committee, myself and the Technology Committee. I'm sorry, I can't seem to get this off. The board thankfully unanimously agreed that it was a prudent proposal, and at that point we had to submit it to, we had to post it on our website for 30 days, which we did. In addition to that, we actually had to publicly place it in the media for 2 weeks prior to what is called a hearing, which is being conducted this evening. Now, the purpose of this hearing And the purpose of the 30-day posting on our website is to get feedback, comments, questions, concerns from the community regarding some of the things that we suggested for allocation for the $1,034,558 that were allocated to Center Merchant School District. At this point, if the board is willing, they will finalize the proposal this evening, making the proposal final. We will, in turn, do a couple of other things that we have to do, and then we would then just submit it to State Ed for approval. Once that approval is reached, we will then be able to expend the funds associated with the items that we allocate, or that we identify for allocation.
So the purpose of this tonight is to hold the official public hearing on this proposal.
Exactly.
Afford the community, you know, the opportunity to make any comments, ask any questions that they've got. If there are none, and the board agrees to move forward, and move forward, and you then
submit. I then submit it to State Ed for approval.
Okay. Are there any comments or questions on the proposal? The proposal has been on the website for 6 days.
For actually longer than 30 days.
Yeah. And if we had a full presentation, Mr. Nofi, Soto gave a very detailed presentation. Are there any questions?
I'm sorry, just one statement, Ricardo, maybe, about the ability to change as we move forward. I would want to know that.
Absolutely. One of the things that we can do is after submitting the proposals to the New York State Department of Education, we actually have the ability, the flexibility, to change up to 25% of that proposal based on assortment of things, based on the conversations we have with teachers, we have with staff. Next week I'm projected to speak to every building in terms of faculty meeting because I wanted to give the staff an overview of what the Smart Schools improvement plan is, how do we propose to expend the expenditure items, and to give them an idea of what that's going to look like, and to actually give them an opportunity to kind of voice their opinion. So depending on what that looks like, we could change up to 25% of that plan. The only thing we would have to do is post the changes of the plan on our website for 2 weeks, and then we have to resubmit it to State Ed for approval.
That being said, your entire process has been very collaborative, so you've gotten a lot of input throughout, throughout the process.
Absolutely. And I honestly believe that the proposal really represents what the district truly needs.
Right.
And I think it's a great step in the right direction. I'm willing to take any questions or comments. I don't know if all the committee members.
Mr. Babsian or Mr. Nofi.
Mr. Nofi,
you were very involved. If you'd like to say anything in support, you're welcome to. You don't have to. Mr. Babsian?
I didn't have any planned comments. As you said, we did get quite a bit of input. It was actually a long process, so it went over a year. Went back to when we still had John Allen here. We've known about it for a while. The state dragged its feet, so we did have plenty of time to get input from people. We talked to a lot of the teachers in the district. We got input from community members. I think all of the committee members brought their own little ideas and special areas of interest to it. So I think it's fairly diverse, and I really think it covers a lot of what the district needs.
Great. Mr. Mackey, you have anything to add?
I'd probably just echo the same sentiments and say that it addresses a lot of the needs that the district has. It's a pretty comprehensive plan, and I'm excited to move forward with it.
Great. Thank you very much. Do we have to adopt it?
Okay.
So that brings us to the next section of the agenda tonight, which is questions and comments regarding tonight's agenda. Are there any? Yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to emphasize just one thing.
So just to remind you, we're recording so that you know. Yeah.
Brad Turnout, sixth grade teacher.
Yeah.
Just wanted to emphasize I know you're considering two models for sixth grade. One would include four teachers, which is what we have this year. One would be five. But the ELA math lab, just want to emphasize, those students, for example, I have 27 students, five have IEPs or special education students. There's no DC teacher there for that. So just something to keep into consideration. They're on their own, but that's not a DCT class. So they're there for math, English, science, and social studies. But for that ELA math lab section, there's no special ed teacher there for them. So just something to take into consideration.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else have any questions, comments on tonight's agenda? Okay, great.
Josh, can you
What is 16? I don't understand what all that is.
So 16 is, and I'm going to be careful as I go through this so as not to divulge any information that our law firm directly be confidential. We received a notice of claim. From the district received a notice of claim, which is notifying the school that there is a potential for a lawsuit. There's statutes that say when you have to provide that notification. One of the New York State laws that pertain to how we deal with our employees says that if an employee working at the district, working for the district, is implicated in a lawsuit or a notice of claim, we as a district, and there's a ton of case law, have an obligation to provide indemnification and provide support. And this is language from our law firm that effectively says the board is fulfilling its legal obligations and its contractual obligations to provide that support.
But at the end, it talks about Garcia and Garcia is doing it, but then it says that it might be, the cost may be taken over by the district's insurance.
Yes, yeah.
So is that going to be a cost to the district or not?
Well, it can be. It depends upon whether the particular litigation is a litigation for which we are insured. You're not insured for every litigation. And at the very beginning, you don't always know because you don't have the full basis of all of the claims. So could it be a cost to the district? Absolutely. At this point, we are hoping that it's an insured claim, but we don't. We're not there yet.
Anyway. Yeah. And usually when it's an insured claim, it doesn't mean that we don't go to our law firm when they give us final advice or anything. You might even just give them a phone call and say, hey, you know, just want to know, this is what almost everyone since I've been here have been covered by insurance, and I believe this one as well. In fact, in the beginning of the year, if you look back on our minutes or our agenda, in the beginning of the year, our reorganization.
Don't we do that? That's
we do do it. It is on the reorganization. Our new law firm said, listen, so you'll see it there for all the cases. But our new law firm said, look, let's be very specific on the board agenda. What we're going to do in the reorg next year is we're going to put this language in addition to the language we already use. So we actually already did this in July of the year.
Yeah, because all board members are in.
Exactly. Everybody
right?
is.
But
our new law firm said to us, look, put this on. And like I said, but the only reason you would use Garcia when Garcia is usually when you have a question about what's going on. And so that explains.
Well, there's a big difference from Garcia and Garcia actually taking the case than asking them, does this look okay?
Exactly. But again, it just again, not every, absolutely, but not every action is insured. So in the first instance, they are our lawyers. If the action is insured and we can use insurance counsel, that's what we do. And you don't always know that until the end. You go and you talk through with your carriers.
And Josh, what is usually the timeline on that the district will know? Will they know by the time the budget process ends, or is that a longer timeline?
Depends on the action. It depends. I mean, it depends upon when the suit is filed, the basis of the suit. It's all over the map. So we will plan. We'll plan as we always do, you know, conservatively. Sure that we've got it right. Any other questions? Great. Motion to adopt the minutes of the regular meeting of January 13th, 2016.
Motion.
Motion second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the following employees for a week of absence, which is in compliance with the terms and conditions of the Center Merges FMLA policy.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education accepts the following resignations.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. Before we get to the next point, I'd like to ask Mr. Soto or Ms. Bates if you'd like to say anything.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Board of Education, it is a joy tonight to enthusiastically recommend Ms. Caitlin Bernero for tenure in the Santa Rosa School District. Ms. Granero began as a paraprofessional in the Santa Rosa School District, as you know, and for the past 3 years, she has been a self-contained 1211 special education teacher at Santa Rosa Middle School. It is a true pleasure and real highlight of my day to enter the classroom of Ms. Granero. She's loved by the staff, the students, and the parents of the students that she teaches. Some of Ms. Granero's, best attributes, in my professional opinion, is her unique ability to truly differentiate her instruction to the various needs of the learners in her classroom, and her wonderful balance of structure and organization in her self-contained setting with creating a nurturing, loving, and positive environment in her classroom. She does that exceptionally well. So it's my proud, I was excited all day. We came in and talked today, and I said, bring your fiance, go out to dinner. It's a true milestone in your educational career. I gave her a hug and said, I can't wait for tonight. I was looking forward to it all day. So, Board of Education, I enthusiastically recommend Ms. Kate Granero for tenure in the Santa Rosa School District.
Thank you. Thank you.
Just to kind of say just one piece of this. I mean, Ms. Major did a great job sort of providing the picture of who, you know, Kate Granero is. I mean, I know her a little differently because I've had a lot of opportunities to kind of speak with Ms. Granero as she kind of transitioned from being a paraprofessional to actually our teacher in our 612 program at the time, and then she eventually went into our 1211 program at the middle school. And one of the things that I have to say about Caitlin is that she loves kids. She loves what she does. And it just shows. And she has a passion for just educating our population, the population that needs a teacher like Ms. Granero that can differentiate not just academically, instructionally, but socially. She's brought kids to a place that when I see them today, and I can't mention any names, when I see them today, I'm filled with so much pride and admiration for what she does every day in her classroom. Because she is the one responsible for the students in terms of where they are now. And I think you know exactly what I'm talking about. Just as Ms. Bates mentioned too, I enthusiastically, wholeheartedly recommend Ms. Granero's tenure in the Santa Rosa School District, and I think she's going to have a great, illustrious career with us, and I look forward to every day that I'm able to, you know, converse with her regarding instruction, regarding kids, and regarding what we can do for our program. Thank you, Kate.
Thank you. Ms. Granero, I wasn't going to say it. I also got to hug you today. I saw the signs of your fiance, but Ms. Bates said it, so I can say it too. I got to hug her as well today. You are an incredible teacher. What you did a few years back with the 612 was nothing short than amazing. There was no question about it. You came into what I thought was one of the most it was the most exciting times for us as a district because we had moved in the direction of bringing back many of our students at that time. And we gave her the charge to be able to accomplish that goal. And you not only accomplished that goal, you took it to a different level and took those students to a different level to the point where we do not have our 612 program anymore. To be inside your classroom, it is exciting. The room itself, boy, it's the room that you created one to two. We had to cut that wall down because of the amount of students that are now in there. There is differentiated instruction going on. You working with those powers in the room and having them work is it's impressive. And I congratulate you, and I thank you, and thank your fiance for allowing us to have you. And he said you could have more of you. That's what he told me. So I want to ask for extra hours.
I can remember that. So I have to say that, you know, tenure is not something that we take lightly at all. I think it's an incredibly important decision. It's a decision that, you know, we're going to give this person the vote of confidence. We're going to be with them for their career. That's the way I think we've all looked at it, and we've had these discussions. So I have to say that in listening to Ms. Bates and Mr. Soto and Mr. Stewart, you know, both tonight and in the past throughout the evaluations, it's been
a breath of fresh air, and it's been great to see. And we live and die, we succeed by our teachers, and that excitement is really what gets you. I didn't get to hug you today, and everybody else did, but you know, I congratulate you.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the tenure appointment of the following individual, Caitlin Grenmar.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education appoints the following individuals as substitutes for the 2015-2016 school year as follows.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
The district recently advertised for candidates to fill various teaching and support staff vacancies for 2015-2016. Candidates were interviewed by committees, building principals, and by the superintendent. Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the following appointments.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the following contracts in accordance with the terms and conditions of the contracts, as well as at the established costs contained in said contracts, and authorizes the president to sign said contracts.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the intermunicipal agreement with the town of Brookhaven for the use of the handicapped accessible playground at the Clayton Huey Elementary School and authorizes the board president to sign such contract.
So what this contract says is effectively it's a split between the school and the town. We were granted a community development grant of $40,000 to build a playground. As part of that, the town has said, well, great, you can use it throughout any school hours, you can use it during any and all school functions, but because it's town dollars, we want the community to be able to use it when school's not in session. So we said, okay, that makes sense. We have this great playground to use, but cover us when somebody makes a claim against us at night, you know, when you're supposed to be managing it, and vice versa. So there's that kind of reciprocal agreement. Motion. Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action upon recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the budget transfers.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
Discussion. Do you have questions on that?
Yes. The line item one on the informational.
Painting?
For the painting? Painting,
yeah.
Okay. The transfer for the painting was required. The district has a five-year painting program, and so throughout the year we do buy paint. This paint was purchased for, in anticipation, we were talking about painting the middle school gym wall. So the paint was purchased in anticipation of possibly doing that. Also, we've since been put that on hold for a while. But also within the district, we decided many years ago that we use only one color within the district to paint the rooms, the hallways, and things like that. So the paint that we have now on hand will be used to continue to, we'll be possibly using it in the summer or during the breaks, painting the hallways, et cetera.
But it's not necessarily COVID to the high school and middle school. It could be district-wide.
It's district, yes.
Okay.
Motion.
Motion.
Oh, we already did that. All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the disposition of records.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the attached textbooks and courses.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. Just do 16 and 17 together. You need to read all of them? No. Let's just do 16 and 17. Yeah. Motion to adopt item 16, which is the indemnification resolution we discussed earlier.
and 17, which is the Smart Schools Investment Plan, you know, what Mr. Soto put up. We had a hearing on a presentation earlier. One group. Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, Board of Education approves the recommendations of the Committee on Special Education and Preschool Special Education for the months of November, December, and January for the 2015-2016 school year.
Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon recommendation of the Superintendent of Schools, the Board of Education conducts a third reading of the following policy and subsequently moves to adopt the policy.
So I think we want to find it. One second. There it is. I don't know if everybody has a copy of their policy or not, mm-hmm. but I just want to make clear. So in the policy, if you go to the second paragraph, it says, it outlines public complaints about the school district will be directed to the proper administrative personnel. So effectively, let's go through the chain of command. Complaints about specific classroom practices shall be directed to the teacher. The matter is not settled satisfactorily. The complainant shall then contact the building principal. If there's no resolution at this level, superintendent of school shall be contacted. We looked at a number of different policies, and I think that while matters can always be in writing brought to the board, you know, and if the proper chain of command is not followed, the board will say, go back and follow the proper chain of command. We want to make very clear that, and by adding the following sentence, if the complaint and related concerns are not resolved at the superintendent level, so you've gone through the chain, started with the teacher, you've then gone to the building principal, you've then gone to the superintendent, right, and they're not resolved at the superintendent level, the satisfaction of the complaint may be carried to the Board of Education. While that right is right that everybody has, we just want to make that clear. So we're going to add, I think I'm proposing that we add that sentence. And then to the end where it says, superintendent will inform the board of all matters, all such matters if necessary. Don't really know what if necessary means. So I think what we want to do is clarify it such that it says, the superintendent will inform the board of matters, of all such matters where that he believes in his discretion will be appealed to the Board of Education. So to the extent somebody's gone to you, you know, I don't want to say that it's not been resolved, but if you believe that there will be an appeal, we want you to let the board know and we want that to be in the policy. So is everybody okay with those additions? Okay.
So then it's...
Not to worry, you're going to hear it on the audio tomorrow, so you can write it and change the policy.
Well, okay.
Mm-hmm. If not, you're going to have to figure it out. Or we'll just give it a document.
Yeah.
Yeah, and actually, I'd like it said again, too, since we have to approve it.
Sure, so I'll read it. I'll read it. Let me read the whole thing. The Board of Education
recommends
that he believes in his discretion will be... Let me read the whole paragraph.
Okay, sorry.
Public complaints about, this is the middle paragraph, about the school district will be directed to the proper administrative personnel. Complaints about specific classroom practices shall be directed to the teacher concerned. If the matter is not settled satisfactorily, the complainant shall then contact the building principal. If there is no resolution on this level, the superintendent of schools shall be contacted. The superintendent will inform the board of all such matters that he believes in his discretion will be appealed to the Board of Education. If the complaint and related concerns are not resolved at the superintendent level to the satisfaction of the complaint may be carried to the Board of Education. Then the last paragraph goes on, all matters referred to the superintendent or the board must be in writing. Concerns registered directly to the board as a whole or to an individual board member shall be referred as soon as reasonably possible to the superintendent for investigation report and or resolution.
So just the addition of those two sentences.
The addition of those two sentences, yep. In the way that I wrote it, this sentence goes after this sentence, which is right. So, motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Motion carries unanimously. No?
My minutes will just reflect that it was approved as amended.
Yeah. Okay.
Got it.
Mr. Foster, if I could really quick, is that policy moving forward? That's going to be written as policy. Can you just change it to he, she, the superintendent?
What is it?
If that's going to be your policy moving forward, that's going to be great.
It's a gender.
Just to save you from the future. Just for now, it makes sense, but for the future, just put he and or she. Or
yes.
She.
Yeah,
yeah,
great
just
point.
He slash she. Yeah.
Great
so,
point.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Perfect. yes.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education approves the academic calendar for the 2016-2017 school year.
Motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously. So we have next section is a general discussion on the emergency purchase of security vehicles. So I don't know if Carol or Russ, if you want to explain the situation that we have encountered with our current security vehicles and the potential danger.
We currently have two security vehicles. We have a 1996 Crown Victoria and the 2001 Crown Victoria. Over the past several years, especially this past year, we have had numerous repairs to both of the vehicles. They both have excessive miles on the vehicles. Recently, with the 2001 Crown Victoria, we had a security guard who just happened to have a CO2 detector on him, and he detected a high level of carbon monoxide in the vehicle. So that vehicle is, we can't repair it, and it's out of use. The other vehicle, the 1996 Crown Victoria, we've had on several occasions exhaust problems, exhaust going into the vehicle, and security guards getting sick, and we had to put that out of service for a while. So being down to one vehicle, and that's in really bad, that's the 1996, and it's in pretty bad shape, we were looking at different avenues of, you know, what could we do? Could we lease it? Could we lease vehicles? Could we purchase vehicles? Could we purchase a new vehicle? Could we purchase a used vehicle? And we looked at the leasing option that wasn't working out. Then we looked at either a purchase, either a new vehicle or a used. The state has a bid program where we took advantage of the bid program where they actually, what we do is we state what type of vehicle we're interested in and put the number of options, and ours was pretty much no options. And then they go out and they send it out and everyone bids on it. And we were looking at a 2016 Ford Escape. And the reason why we're looking at an Escape versus a sedan was that many times the security, they have the cones and things like that that they, you know, they use going from place to place, and then also the vehicle could be used by district employees if they're going on a trip or whatever. So we decided that would be the best vehicle to look at. We did send it out for a bid. We got a good price of $22,000 for a 2016 Escape. Then we were looking at used vehicles, and we were looking at 2015 vehicles. And but the problem with that was when we were looking at the 2015, many of them came with a lot of options, which we weren't interested in. We couldn't standardize the vehicles. So we couldn't decide on, you know, what color, whatever's in the lot, that's what we would have. We'd have a limited warranty on the vehicles, and also the prices were higher than the bid. So we decided that the best option would be to go for a new vehicle, and the district has had vehicles for many years, we drive them to the ground, like these two?
They were donated as well. We never even purchased them. They were two donated vehicles, so they didn't cost us. Yeah.
And
Fine. And we were concerned because at one point in time we didn't have a security vehicle. So that's why it was an emergency situation that we kind of all came together as an administration. And
the other one is on, you know, in and out of service.
And we were really concerned that we were going to have a problem here.
So we're talking about two vehicles?
Two vehicles.
One vehicle.
We're talking about two vehicles.
So it's just to replace two cars that are end of life. One of them is still working, one of them is not working, but it is
And the other one
time.
Is almost, the 1996 is almost.
And the warranty with these is a typical 3-year warranty, or how does it work?
It's a typical warranty, typical new
car warranty. So when you looked at it, just to talk dollars again, used versus new, it was very similar because we got a lower base model on the new.
Yes, without all the extras, and the warranty was really big.
Right.
The warranty
was a big difference when you went out there to get the other one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Did we purchase these already?
We have purchased them, correct. We do not have them yet here on site.
Did we bother to try our local dealers?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. In fact, what we did was initially we had certain vehicles on the certain company, the certain dealerships, at certain dealerships. And so I had asked Mr. Crowell and Mr. Townsend to go out to the local dealers to see, dealerships, to see if we could get, if they could match the price because they had discounts, or match it or do better, and not one of them could even come close. So we said, okay, well, then we'll go out, we'll use the New York State contract, go out to bid, and we got a really good price. But we did, yes, we did.
And it was the fire department through Mr. Townsend where we wanted the other one. So he really has always looked out for us. And if he went and spoke and couldn't get anything, and there are no more fire department vehicles to donate to us, it was because he's really helped us out in that area.
Yes.
Did you say 201?
Two. Questions and comments from the community on matters not on the agenda tonight. Are there any? Yes.
The agenda.
So can't hear you. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay. I have a question that from the agenda, Mr. Soto and Mrs. Bates. I love the idea of the boat starting in 6th and 7th grade. It's great, but I've also been wanting the research skills. Now, are we going to lose that piece? Because if it's gym research skills, where would the language fit in? You know yet? Are you? I wanted the board to consider it too. I couldn't decide between language or the research skills, but because it's so important, my daughter's learned so much with.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, that's what we wrestled with. Not only that, we wrestled with the STEM. We wrestle with the ELA extra, like Mr. Turnhow had said. So at this point in time, the answer is no. We haven't decided what's best, right? We do know that we believe the load is extremely important, and that's why we brought it to the board tonight. We thought that we would be remiss if we did not explain to them that we think that's the area we need to move forward in. But we have not come up with a definitive plan yet. We came up with four different plans. And all the things we like, each one of us has a reason why we think something is extremely important. We tapped into the expert next to me here in curriculum to kind of see how she felt about it. But we're not there yet. We're getting pretty close. Mr. Soto kind of came up with some brilliant ideas, and believe it or not, it was this morning after we all said, okay, these are all good ideas, and then he came back with something that he. We were really in shock. I think that's because of his expertise in master scheduling that he came up with something. But we didn't want to bring that forward yet because we're not confident enough to say that and then kind of lead people in the direction thinking, oh, they're going to go that way. We want to be dead on accurate when we show the board and the community this is our plan.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that the board knows, and I'm sure you already know that. It would be wonderful to be able to keep the research skills into the foreign language. I don't know if that would be noble quarter of each, but I just wanted to like I said, I got one. They're both so great and so important. I just wanted to make sure.
Thank you very much.
Both are considered. Absolutely.
Thank you.
On to seven with the resignation of Tracy Foreman.
Yeah.
I know Mr. Soto and I have had many conversations about at the middle school level in particular, replacing our teachers when the special education teachers either retire or, in this case, resign. At the high school level, a couple of years ago, I don't know if it was Mr. Stewart, if it was Donald James, but at one point they started hiring duly certified special education teachers. So I just, Mr. Soto and I have had these conversations many a times, having a child that had gone through the program at the middle school level, it would behoove the district to hire, to replace. I know Tracy was the inclusion teacher at the eighth grade level, to replace that with a duly certified math, you know, special ed. Because there was a lot of times when Mr. Schauer, who works endlessly teaching our kids math, had to go in and help the other kids because the special education teacher did not know the content area. So I just want to leave that as a consideration. I know you and I have had extensive open years conversations.
That's great. Well, I think that's a go on.
And our focus has been, you're absolutely right, since I've been here, our focus has been the dual certification. And as you know, at the state also, I can say youngsters, not because I'm getting older here, but the new staff coming in, I think it is mandated, right?
Well, what happens now with certification, there is no K-12 special education certification any longer because of the same reason that Ms. Mitchell kind of commented. The state acknowledges the fact that if you get someone that has that due certification, understands the content and understands the specificity of special education, how to differentiate instruction, it makes for a stronger professional, makes for a stronger teacher. So we have had that conversation. We have moved in that direction in the future. I believe every individual that we've hired over the last few years have had some due certification. And like I said, the new certification that is received through the state, teachers have to have that due certification. They have to have either they must be duly certified in special education as well as English, social studies, science, or math.
We highly count on our, because we have an extensive hiring policy, so we, our procedures, and we really put a lot of weight into the committee members and their recommendations and the rubrics that they fill out and they give us. So it's an extensive thing that, you know, sometimes in the end, it works out exactly like you said. Sometimes it doesn't because the committee sees something else, especially in some specific positions. But I think almost for the most part, we've done exactly what you've said since I've been here and hired people who had dual certifications.
Well, I know recently, Mr. Soto, I even had the conversation, even at the high school level, we only have one math special education teacher. And since the special education is 7 through 12, if you have a teacher at the middle school level, they can be utilized in the high school. So, as you always say, bang for your buck.
Well, the one at the high school now we hired since I've been here, correct?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, Mr. Lloyd.
Yes.
So you're right.
So, but we have areas where we have two teachers, both duly certified. Mm-hmm. And I just feel that math is such a area of content.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I bring it to
the
attention.
That's a great point. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, dates to remember. The next Board of Education. I'm sorry.
I was here last month. I'm sorry I didn't meet you. I'm Maria
Renzetti.
I'm with the I missed you last month. It was regarding the play and the budget and the rights to do the play and so on. I was wondering if that was ever entertained or brought into consideration.
We haven't gotten to that point in the budget yet. I know the board, there were, you know, emails that have gone back and forth. We gave the board some information regarding the entire cost of, right at this point in time, I think it was, and I forget the exact number of what it was. It was like $12,000, you know, that the district currently pays for that.
For the stipends, for, as we
know,
had
for
mentioned.
For all the stipends, for things like that. And then we went back and hit. We went back into history. The one thing that we did clear up, because I had a big concern when you stood up there and spoke about students actually having to take money out of their pockets.
Right now, they switched that and said it's not mandatory.
It was never mandatory before. It was the first time it had happened. My understanding, only one child had given the money in. So that next day, and Miss Harkin is wonderful. She understood. She's just trying to put on the best production and a very large production this year. But it will come up in future discussions here with the board.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other questions? Next Board of Education meeting will be on February 10th, 2016 at 7:30 in the district office boardroom. Motion to adjourn to executive session for purposes of discussions regarding proposed pending current litigation, collective negotiations under the Taylor Law, CMPA, and other matters, the disclosure of which would result in an unwarranted invasion of personal privacy. Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously. Thank you.